Hello and welcome to the Dave Warnocky episode of From the Internet. My name's Ryan John and I interview people who I've met or who are doing things and I know from the internet. Now, Dave Warnocky, he's a stand-up comedian and a trivia host. Not many people can say they do trivia full-time, but Dave pretty much does that. Does a lot of pubs and corporate gigs, but his own Facty Fact show has done the Perth Fringe, the Adelaide Fringe, the Melbourne International Comedy Festival and a bunch of other stuff as well. I've been on the show in the Perth one. It was so much fun being on the show. I've gone and watched the show heaps and I love watching it. It's incredible. And it was so good that they picked it up onto Channel 31 and sort of made a TV edition of it. And it was the highest rating show on the Oztam ratings when it was on 31. So good on him for doing that. It's pretty impressive. Now, I met Dave, I think in 2010, I was making a short film that premiered in the 2011 International Comedy Festival. And I cast Dave as the weirdo sex pest. And it's weird because I'd never met him and to kind of go, hey, mate, my name's Ryan. I was wondering if you could be a sex pest for us. I think you'd be good at it. He said yes. It was great. And we've been friends ever since. We did a radio show at Sin together as well. And it's great to see him doing so well. Now, I asked Dave Warnocky what I ask everyone, but he kind of had a different answer to the first question. I always say, so if you meet a stranger, how do you explain what you do? And this is what he said.
So just a stranger comes up to you in the street. See, I wouldn't really trust a stranger. If someone came up to me and said...
You know what? No one's ever questioned that. They just go into the answer.
Oh, really?
But it's good. It's very healthy that you question that.
Well, like, don't talk to strangers. Rule number one for all children listening to the podcast. and second one, I don't really... Having said that, I say I don't trust strangers, but I'll tell the listeners what happened on the way here.
Oh, yeah, go.
Well, I was parking outside the podcast studio where we are in Brunswick in Melbourne.
Yep.
And I pulled up outside... into a two-hour park. It's a free park. I know the street well. And there was a guy, like a mechanic, hosing down a car, like washing it in right next to where I've parked. I've parked sort of between two driveways. He's in one of them. And he's eviling me as I'm sort of unlocking the car, giving me these looks. And then he goes, mate, you're going to get fined if you park there. And I'm like, I'm thinking, no, I won't.
It's a two-hour park.
It's a two-hour park. And then he says, yeah, but there's no meter there. And I'm thinking, yeah, exactly. It's a two-hour park. There's no meter. I didn't even
know. Yeah, I reckon... I'm in a two-hour thing with no meter, and I'm like, oh, I can get three out of that.
Yeah, exactly. You can push these things. And then he goes, oh, this one doesn't have any sensors. See, these ones, they got sensors, those white dots, and he points to these white dots on the ground in two parks down the street that are occupied.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. And he goes, yeah, they'll fine you if you park there, because I don't know how long you've parked there.
So they see a car there, and they'll just go, oh, well, it's fair to assume he's been there for 6 hours.
Exactly. And he goes, yeah, you could probably contest it. I'm thinking, yeah, I bloody would
contest it. Yeah, I would test it, yeah.
And then he says, but why would you bother? You could just park across the road. And I'm thinking, is this guy trying to psych me out so I don't park in front of his property?
Is it his business there?
It's his business, yeah. And I'm thinking, like, it looks like a mechanic-y type thing. Maybe he wants to pull into that bay with a car.
Or customers coming in.
And I say,
he sized you up and like, because this guy doesn't look like a car fit out man.
Exactly. And he's got a hose as well. So I'm sort of intimidated by he could make me wet as well as look like an idiot. So I actually gave in and I said, I actually thanked him and said, thanks for the inside tip, mate.
You just saved me $33.
Exactly. And I pulled across the road and parked in another bay, not in front of his business, another 201, which seemed to have a white dot on the ground.
Right.
But I don't think that white dot means anything. Oh, man.
Well, I'm going to be there about 2 hours, so we'll find out soon.
Yeah, we're going to find out. So I feel like such an idiot. But if that man had said, oh, by the way, mate, what do you do? I probably would have lied. Like, if I go to a hairdresser's, I'll never tell him what I do.
Why not? Is it just too hard to explain?
It's complicated. It's really complicated. I just say that I work for a media business.
And then they don't ask any more questions?
Yeah, they go, oh, yeah, cool. Like advertising or something. You go, yeah, something like that. But that's not what it is at all.
But why don't you want to tell people?
Because they have so many follow-up questions. Yeah, especially... All right, so there's two elements of my...
Well, if you don't like follow-up questions, this might be an awkward podcast for you.
I know it's fine for you, but you know the awkward talk that... hairdressers give. You know hairdresser talk.
I do know hairdresser
talk.
How's
your family? You're going away. Me and my boyfriend, who's a builder, are going to Bali. That's all they ever talk about.
I think you know every single hairdresser has a boyfriend and goes to Bali with them. A boyfriend who's a builder.
It's exactly that. They're always a builder. It's like they're contractually obliged to find a boyfriend that is a builder. Actually, I've got a great hairdresser now. He's a male guy. His name's called Pasquale.
Pasquale? And does he ask
him
questions?
No, I tell him. We've got a good rapport.
Okay. Well, but maybe that's what the girl going to Bali was after. And you were just too cool for her.
Yeah, I was too cool. So, but if I was to tell someone what I do, I think I would describe myself in two facets. And that is, one, I am a quiz guy.
Yep.
So, I do a lot of trivia events. I host them. I write trivia questions. I love trivia and I love knowing things. And the other half is I am a comedian of sorts.
Why of sorts? And why the hesitation? Is that like weird to say out loud?
It's hard because I don't know. At what point do you become, yes, I am a comedian? I mean, I've been doing it for comedy for 4 or 5 years.
Well, on a previous podcast with Ben Pobgy, and I've had this conversation just with people all the time, it's that if you do, like I've done a little bit of stand-up, but I don't make lots of money. It's not my main income, so I would never call myself a comedian. Do you think it's a money thing, or do you think it's just like what you do most of? Or
I think money, not so much, but I think maybe time.
Yep.
Time, for example, if I was an accountant and I worked my accounting job 40 hours a week, but I did one four-minute stand-up gig a week on average.
Yeah.
I don't think you could say that you were.
But you could say stand-up. I do comedy, but you wouldn't be a comedian.
Yeah, I do comedy because I think, I don't know, like I feel like you just have to earn your place. Like if you meet a famous comedian, often they get told, oh, I'm a comedian. And I know that they think, oh yeah.
Yeah, righto.
But you know.
Yeah, it's weird. I remember Jerry Seinfeld was on Howard Stern's show, and Howard Stern, he didn't say, I'm a comedian or something. He kind of said something that implied that, you know, it's like, well, Jerry, you tell your jokes on stage and I tell mine on here. We're kind of the same. And Seinfeld was just like, I don't think so.
He actually called him on it.
Yeah, he was just like, Jerry's like stops down the intro and he goes, is this stand-up? Is this what you think stand-up is? And Howard Stern, he's like very confident, very powerful broadcaster. And he was like, oh, no, I mean, oh, he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, this. He goes, don't get me wrong. I know that you research your interviews and you do this and you do that. But he's like, you're not a comedian.
You're not a comedian or you're not a stand-up?
I can't remember. I'd love to go back and watch it.
Yeah, because I feel like if you get really specific, then I guess you can be a comedian without being a stand-up. Like if you...
Well, I tell jokes every day on the radio and get paid for it, but I don't call myself a comedian.
I guess often people throw around the term humorist.
Yeah, humorist, is that like a gateway to being a comedian?
No, I guess a humorist often, if you write comedy books,
mm-hmm.
like for example, I know someone that I've talked to you about a lot, Danny Wallace.
Yep,
who writes Join Me, and you wrote the Yes Man book that Jim Carrey movie was based on.
And who's his mate? His old roommate?
Oh, Dave Gorman.
Yes.
See, Dave Gorman is an English stand-up comedian. He does stand-up, but Danny Wallace doesn't do stand-up.
Okay, right.
But he writes comedy books, so he would describe himself. I've seen in interviews and on his website as a humorist. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool. And it sounds kind of, I don't know. It's got a good ring to it. But also it has a wanky ring to it.
Maybe yeah, a little bit. I like it. I'm a humorist.
Yeah, it does sound wanky.
When you say, so therefore, when you say you're not quite like comfortable in saying you're a comedian, you just say, I'm in the trivia business.
Trivia business. Yeah, I'm definitely happy to say that I do trivia stuff. Yeah, because I do that all the time.
Yeah. And you still like it? Because you've been doing that for ages now, right?
Yeah, so I've been working for a trivia company for coming up to next month. It'll be, oh my goodness, maybe 5 years since I auditioned.
Far out. So well, you were at that company before I was.
Sure, and then, I still am there.
Yeah, and then I started after you, and that would have been when I still lived in Melbourne 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So there you go. You would have been there 5 years.
5 years, and I think that I reckon I've probably hosted 700 or 800 trivia nights.
Far out. Is it one that stands out?
Trivia. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the one where I hosted at the Glenferrie Hotel in Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And it was the day after Hawthorne lost the 2012 premiership.
Yeah.
And I got there, and there was this big group of 30. So 30 guys in a circle drinking, and I'm like, that's weird. Like, they're just in the middle of the trivia bit. And there was maybe four or five other teams on the outskirts, sort of intimidated by this group in the circle. And my girlfriend was there, and she was on a team with someone. And the manager comes up to me and goes, hey, mate, just so you know, this is like after I've set up, so 30 minutes later.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at these guys going, who are you? This is weird.
Yeah.
And then the manager comes up to me and says, hey, just so you know, that's the entire Hawthorne AFL football squad. And I went, oh, is it? And I looked over and I recognised the one player I know, which is Buddy Franklin.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's him. And then I went up to my girlfriend. I'm like, did you know that's them? She's like, yeah, everyone knows. And I had no idea. And I asked the normal regular teams, like, are you guys here for the quiz? Which they were. So I gave them their trivia sheets, their pens, that kind of stuff. And then the AFL club is still sitting there intimidating.
Right in the middle of it.
Like, a metre and a half away from where I'm standing is where the circle starts. And it's massive, 30 of them. And I think, well, I may as well ask them, you guys up for a pub quiz? And then a couple of them are like, yeah, let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, God, here we go. And I'm asking.
You know, they were pretty loose. They've just lost the grand final.
They'd been there a long time, drowning their sorrows.
Yeah.
And we're getting through it, reading out the questions. Like, they're heckling a little bit, but nothing too brutal. Until one of them notices. He's like, hey, you look like that guy from Con Air. That character, Garland Green. And I'm like, oh, you mean Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi, I've got that a lot. He's like, yeah. And then they all go, yeah, it's that guy from Con Air. Because I guess they don't really know Steve Buscemi's
actually in a lot of other stuff.
Better movies. Not that Con Air's bad, but obviously they're a big group of blokes. So they've probably seen this action movie from 1997.
Was watching more Nicolas Cage films.
Woo! Love Con Air! And there's a scene, have you seen Con Air?
Many times.
There's a scene where Steve Buscemi, the plane is going down that they've hijacked, and he's like, he's playing in the movie like a mass serial killer, like a parody of Hannibal Lecter.
But isn't he also like with the young kids and stuff? Like he's a bit of a...
Yeah, like the worst criminal of all time. Like he's a mass murderer. I think they said he's killed like 30 people or something. Like it's crazy. And he's like, at one stage he says, I drove through 3 states with a girl's head as a hat. That's one of his lines. Nicolas Cage is like, don't you talk to me. That's pretty much what he says.
And what did Nicolas Cage say?
Pardon?
What did Nicolas Cage say?
Don't you talk to me. Put the bunny back in the box.
That's right.
Come on, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And then there's this scene where the plane is going down and Steve Buscemi's holding a Barbie doll singing. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And the entire Hawthorn Football Club starts singing, he's got the whole world. While I'm trying to run this trivia night. And then the other weird thing that happened was, at the halftime break, one of them goes, mate, we've been taking bets on how much you weigh. I'm quite a small, thin man, especially compared to these 6'4" athletes.
Yep.
And they all take a guess. And I'm like, so, you know, you're listening, you're about to know how small I am. I weigh 52 kilos.
Really?
52.
And you're not short.
Yeah, I'm probably 169 centimetres.
Really? No, I thought it'd be more than that.
Maybe 170.
Yeah, right.
Oh, so, okay. I mean, I'm not short.
Yeah.
So 52 kilos is very, very light. And then they're, that's hilarious. And then Buddy Franklin, you know, at the time, their most famous player.
Yep.
Comes back in from the bar holding a jug of red cordial, probably with vodka in it as well, I think. And they go to him, hey, buddy, how much do you reckon this kid weighs? And he looks at me, puts down the jug and goes, let me pick you up. I'm like, pardon? He goes, I'm going to pick you up. Like he told me the second time, I'm going to pick you up. Puts his hands underneath both of my arms and picked me up with such ease. It was like me picking up a glass of water.
Because
this guy's like, 200 centimeters tall.
He's huge,
He'd be more than double my weight, over 100 kilos easy. And then he sort of shakes me around, puts me back down and goes, 62 kilos? And I'm like, come on, mate. Who do you think you're dealing with here? And I said, no, 52. And so it was a rough one.
Did they play the trivia?
Oh, they were terrible. They sucked. Yeah. They lost the grand final the day before and they lost trivia the day after.
And you know what? Still to this day, they've moved on.
That's right. Exactly. They've come back. They've won a grand final since. But how many times have they won a pub quiz? Not many, I would guess. I don't think any. But that's the one that stands out to me out of 700 or 800.
One time I got a call at 6 o'clock from Pete and he said, can you do a thing in half an hour?
So this is the boss of the trivia company?
Yeah, and he said, someone's pulled out last minute. It's on in 30 minutes. Can you get down to whatever? And I was like, well, I kind of had to. I was in the area and I was like, I feel blind.
You've got no excuse.
He's in a tight spot. And I was like, you know what? I'll do it. And it was Goldman Sachs and JB Weir, which is like this big investment bank. Like Goldman Sachs is one of the biggest investment banks in the world. And at the time I was working in finance for Pitcher Partners. But earlier, like the year before when I was at uni, I applied for a job at Goldman Sachs.
Oh.
And they've got a 5-step process to being hired. And I didn't even get to like the first step. So I didn't even get close.
They didn't get a look in.
Didn't even get a look in.
So they look at your CV and went, nope.
Nope.
God, how's that feel?
It hurts, man. Oh, no, but like I went to Swinburne. Like these guys kind of just go to Melbourne Uni.
Do they look at the uni and go, not Melbourne?
It seems that they're all from Melbourne and Monash and all top of their class. Like these guys have first pick of thousands of graduates a year.
Sure.
And so, it was fine. Like, I wasn't expecting to get it. But then I got asked to host this thing. And so, I get up there and I said,
ironically, you're not the first pick again.
Yeah. I never thought of that way. I was just filling in. But yeah, I sort of told the story about how I applied and blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, I'll I'll tell this joke at the start, and if it goes well, my night will be set. And if it doesn't, it'll be an awkward gig. But I'm like, all or nothing, fuck it, what do I care? And yep. I was just like, so where's the HR table? And they're like, oh, woo, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a staff woo, party.
Human resources, what's up?
Yeah, and they're having a good time. And then I told them this story. And then I just looked back at HR and I was like, you are probably not going to win this quiz. And they liked it. They liked it. It was good.
That's
and
good.
And then I said, I was like, but when I didn't get the job, I thought, one day I'm going to be paid by Goldman Sachs and JB Weir. I'm going to be employed by them one day. And ladies and gentlemen, this evening, you are witnessing a young man's dream come true. And then everyone stood up and clapped.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, little did they know. I was like, well, I just get a couple hundred dollars and a free beer and then I'll be back to my other job tomorrow. But in the meantime, we'll be sweet. But yeah, I always remember that, those jerks.
Bloody Goldman Sachs. Where are they now?
Probably still doing all right.
Damn.
Well, they copped it in the GFC.
I was about to say, I hope the GFC wiped them out big time.
Well, maybe yesterday. I don't know when I'm going to publish this podcast, but when we recorded this, the stock market crashed yesterday.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
You're a finance... Do you still keep up with finance?
No.
Nah. So you want to have the inside knowledge. Can you explain to me... if it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay, Dave.
Okay, thanks.
Because how much have you got invested in the share market? You'll be fine.
What's a billion yen worth? What's the... No, I've got no idea.
I sometimes think if I wanted to get a job back in like the biz or like being a finance journalist, but I'm like, I don't know any of the... Like, I'm out of the loop. Like, I don't know
but
anything.
But surely you could get back in, couldn't you?
Yeah.
A few Google searches. Your Goldman Sachs phone calls.
I've been out of the biz for a few years, but I read the Fin Review yesterday, so...
I'm pretty back in.
Pretty back in?
That's right.
I'm sure that'll work.
I think so.
Tell me a bit about, like we were saying before, that like what you do exactly. But since when I met you, you were like doing music, and then you went to like musical comedy, and then comedy, and now sort of hosting these comedy shows and Facty Fact and stuff.
Yeah, it's been a real... It's funny when one thing leads to another, and then suddenly you feel like this is what I do. And then a few, like, I have lots of friends now. I thought about this recently. So for ages, music is what I did.
Yep.
And people knew me as a music guy. But now I have so many friends that would not know that I ever did that.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
And I knew you back then. And I went and saw your band play at a gig at the few different places. And even I sometimes, I go, oh, I forgot Dave used to do that.
Yeah. And then I think, well, now I'm into that comedy zone where people think, I know, people I went to high school with were like, yeah, that's Dave. He does that comedy thing. But I think maybe in 5 years, what am I going to be known as? That's Dave. He does that thing. So anyway, it started with in high school. I was in a lot of bands.
On the bass?
Playing bass yep. guitar. That's right. Only because I had two friends in my class in year 7, first year of high school, and they played guitar.
Yeah.
I didn't want to play drums. I knew that.
Yeah.
Didn't want to do that. So I was like, well, I'll get the bass guitar. So
was it because they already had guitar?
Yeah, they had the guitar. Actually, one of them's brother had a bass, so I tried it out. For a couple of jams.
Yeah.
Playing one note. So I'm talking like we had no idea what was doing. Dun, 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 dun. That was it. And then I got my own equipment and I, you know, was in bands all throughout high school. Sort of, you know, like I said, it was my thing to be in bands, which I loved.
Yep.
And then at the end of school, my last sort of band broke up and I sort of went solo.
Is the bass the hardest instrument to go solo with?
Well, I also picked up... I played guitar and keyboard as well. So, yeah, I didn't play bass in the solo act.
But you never see a guy that's like, just me and my bass.
No, unless you're doing spoken word poetry over the slap bass, maybe.
Well, have you considered that?
Well, yes, I've actually... I've done a comedy sketch doing that. But anyway, so, and then...
I was joking when I asked that.
I know. I've done... And I was doing solo gigs, but I wasn't a very good singer. Not very good. Got not right. good enough. And then I started doing these gigs just at sort of all ages events that anything... just like my band used to play at, but I was talking in between the songs and me just making up stuff between the songs was getting a better reaction than the actual songs
then
themselves.
And you're like, was that like, oh shit, or was that like, oh, maybe I'm on something?
Yeah, actually, I remember thinking, yeah, this is good. And my dad actually came to see me play one of these gigs and he was like, yeah, you're getting lots of laughs up there. And then I came home another night from one of these gigs and I just it felt really good to get these laughs, I must say that. And I still was still enjoying playing my songs, but I was pretty aware that, oh man, it's not as good as when I was playing music with other people.
Yeah.
And I came home one night and the Raw Comedy Final was being aired on the ABC. I think it was the 2008 Raw Comedy Final.
Yep.
And one of the acts was Smart Casual, who are Sydney Sydney duo, not university. They're from Sydney. They're a duo. Two half brothers, and they were doing a song and they made it to the final. And I thought the song was so funny.
Yeah.
And I remember it was kind of an epiphany moment where I realized, hey, you can do music and be funny. Why don't I'm getting better reaction. Yeah, it was honestly yeah. like that. I was like, my God, which is so funny. And I've met them once since, but I never told them. And I was like, yeah, you guys sort of started this. I don't know if they'd apologize or say. No worries.
I'll take it as a compliment. Yeah. Where are those guys now?
Pardon?
Where are they now?
Oh, they're still gigging around, doing lots of festivals and stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Last I heard. And so I started doing musical comedy for a bit. And then So I wrote a few comedy songs. It was going okay for sort of 18 months or so, but then stopped thinking about comedic ideas for songs and started thinking more about just the talking. And
yeah.
sort of without even really thinking about it, it had been a year and I'd be like, oh, I haven't played a comedy song in over a year. And it was just, I would go to the gigs and just do stand-up.
Yeah.
And so suddenly it was like, and then it had been so long that I thought about it and went, I've actually got no interest in doing those comedy songs anymore.
And it was just purely an interest. It wasn't like a... I don't know, like a tactical career thingy, or you just like,
no.
Oh, I just got into it.
But then I also felt that often if you rock up to a stand-up gig and you're the only one with a guitar, a lot of the time people go, oh my God, like the other acts.
Oh, right. Go, yeah.
Oh, here we go. And some people are great. Like they will kill it. They're really respected. They do yep. music. Like Ryan Coffey or Oliver Clark, who are two great Melbourne musical comedians, and they still do music and it's bloody great. But I just don't think I was good enough.
Yeah, right. And writing the comedy songs, performing and stuff.
Yeah, and the comedy
songs.
Because
you still have to be a legit good performer and
yeah.
singer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Ryan Coffey's great when he's got his own stuff. He's not just singing songs when he's got the loop pedal and he's like,
yeah.
he's incredible actually, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And him and Oliver Clark, the two I just mentioned, both have incredible singing voices.
Yeah, well, I
Once
saw
again,
Oliver Clark last night. He was very funny.
Oh, the pipes, warming up the pipes.
Yeah.
One of his albums, I believe, is called that. And I didn't have that voice. So I just started doing stand-up and then... But I was also doing trivia at the same time.
And trivia is great because it gets you so comfortable in being in front of a crowd. Like, I reckon I did 50 trivia gigs just not... wanting to necessarily do that full-time or stand-up, but I just wanted to do radio. But I always just thought just being in front of crowds and just entertaining and just steering the ship, like, it's just such a good, like, a life skill.
Yeah, and, like, well, with trivia now, I've done so many, it just feels like breathing. I'm just like, well, like, you could hand me a microphone and turn me around, there's an audience. It's like, well, ask them some questions, you know,
yeah.
warming up. It's like, it's just like a routine, which is great. And I love that because with trivia, they're there for a reason and you also always have the content to fall back on.
Yeah, if the joke doesn't land,
yeah, exactly.
you're just like, anyway, next question.
So, and I'm not cracking, and I'm not claiming that I am cracking jokes yeah. all the time. But, you know, you try and, you know, keep the night rolling, that kind of thing. But if something awkward does happen, it's like, well, anyway, you've got the content. You
yeah,
know
you
that they want to listen to the next track, the next music song and tell you what artist it was. So, it was yeah. fine. And then, so about 3 years ago, this time 3 years ago, so 2012, probably just before this incident with Hawthorn Football Club, I decided... I want to combine comedy and hosting these trivia events. I want to do a quiz show, a live quiz show. So without any experience or sort of any real knowledge of what I was doing, I came up with these ideas for segments and questions. And I booked a venue, which is primarily a music venue that I've been playing a lot at in my band.
Yep.
And I was still playing music at this time.
Okay.
And then, but that sort of gradually faded away until it was just comedy.
Yep.
So there's all these timelines going on. So yeah. there's a lot of overlapping.
We need a graph.
Yeah,
a big graph.
You need a big graph. But then this time 3 years ago, I booked this venue that my band had played at a lot in Fitzroy here in Melbourne. Seats about 100 people. And I booked these two teams of three comedians. So six comedians all up. And I offered to pay them all because I knew that it's like, well, this is a new quiz show. Some
yep.
of these people I don't even know really well. They've got a bit of a profile. I'm sort of banking on them bringing in people in.
Yeah.
So I offered to pay them all and I also had to pay the venue. So I put a bit of outlay, you know, sort of...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
$800 or $900 is what it was going to cost.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I better sell some damn tickets.
Yeah.
Luckily, I did. It sold out, which was really, really great. And it went way too long. Like, I think it was maybe an hour and 40 minutes or something.
Really?
Because I'd never done it before.
Yeah,
I had
no idea
how long. You know, I had... And I was cutting rounds. Like, I had probably 12 rounds ready to go and I probably needed six an hour-long show.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fun. I wasn't the best at it, but I felt like, yeah, this is something I could consider doing again. And also, I'd planned... If it went well, I got someone to film it. So that was another expense, actually. I had to pay someone to film it. So I could film it and then edit it down to 5 minutes and pitch the idea to comedy festivals the following year to get good venues.
Yeah.
Which I did. And I went the next year and did it. The Adelaide Fringe Festival. The show's called Facty Fact, by the way. That's my quiz show.
Yep.
Can't really remember why I went with that title. I think about that.
Is it sort of like, and you feel like now you've done it around the country, it's been on TV, you're like, well, I can't change the name now.
I do feel that way, yeah. It's like, even though, you know, maybe 1% of the people I want to watch it have seen it, it's like, well, still some people know it as Facty Fact, starting again with a better title. But I suppose if someone offered me a lucrative television deal, they said...
Call it whatever you want, champ.
Yeah, whatever. Just call it Dave Warnke's an absolute cock. I think it's fun. Welcome to the show.
But I was just going to say, the quiz show, like success or fail on TV or stage, it's got to do with the content and the people. The name is...
Yeah, absolutely.
Never mind the Buzzcocks. Like, you know, great show. What does the title mean? Who cares? Like,
that's right. Well, it's the Sex Pistols, but that's fine.
Oh, there you go. But I didn't care. Still like the show.
And exactly. It's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
But, or Spicks and Specs. It's like, well, it's just that Bee Gees song.
Yeah. So I could have. Yeah. And so obviously you've kind of toured that for like 3 years now, and it's evolved and changed and become different. And
yes, I've done heaps of different versions of it. Like, I did just a normal standard quiz show the first time with two teams of three comedians, no sort of theme. The following year, I did one called Facty Fact, Are Comedians Good Lovers? Where I had three contestants all competing against each other, and each round represented a stage in a relationship.
Right.
And at the end, we got to see how good they were at a lover, and I kept a national tally of who the best lover
was. Yeah, cool.
I had about, you know, 60 guests or something on over four festivals, and we found out who was good at loving and
who was
bad.
The best loving?
Young comedian Demi Lardner.
Really?
Demi Lardner?
I saw her last night.
Oh, really? Yeah. She is apparently probably the youngest person I had on the entire
show. Is that
show.
Awkward when the best lover was, what, 18 at the time or something?
Yeah, she would have been about 19 years old at the time.
And that's actually quite funny, because in her set last night, she talked a lot about the fact that she's not a good lover.
Well,
and now here we find out.
She's absolutely got the Facty Fact credited rating of being the best lover in the country.
Where do you think hosting and preparing that show fits into the conversation we were having before about being a comedian? Because, like, I've written here, like, Dave, music, then musical comedy, and then I've got hosting comedy shows.
Yeah, sure. So I see it's still comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. What do you mean, do I see it as comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but do you see yourself as a comedian within that show, or are you just more of a host, and is the two the same thing?
I think... No, I do see myself as a comedian in that context, because I write the show as well.
Yep.
So it's not like someone said, hey, you're a good-looking guy in his early 30s.
Yeah, here's your script.
Got a great haircut. You look nice in a suit. Can you read that out? And I don't think that happens actually too much. I think a lot of people that do host shows have a lot of input.
Yeah.
But some people definitely don't. They're a great host, but they have a team of writers. But I actually take a lot of pride in the stupid, stupid segments that I come up with.
They're great.
The questions that I write.
They're
like, I think it's one of my skills is thinking of silly segments and silly questions to ask people. So, yeah, I do see myself as a comedian in that context, because I guess the comedy comes from the guests, but also comes
from... Oh, a lot of it comes from the questions.
That's why I love hosting the show, because I see a lot of comedy shows out there, and I think which are great, like sort of quiz show, panel shows. A lot of the questions are just questions designed to have these world-class comedians riff about. So it's pretty much it's a reason for them to be there.
Yeah.
But I think what I would like to do is, and what I do enjoy doing, is coming up with a show where the show itself, if we just did the show, it would still be pretty funny.
Yeah.
But if you add in comedians,
makes it better.
Hopefully it's very funny.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like, so I don't know why you wouldn't make the questions funny if you could.
Yeah.
If you can.
Would you say it might be lazy not to?
Well,
can you just go, well, I've got these great guests, so I'll just let them do the heavy lifting for the entertainment value, and I'll just sit here and say how good my show is.
Yeah, well, I guess so, but also the risk with that is, because I do a live show and it's 60 minutes, you're the audience, you see everything that happens. There's no bits that suck that you cut out.
Yeah.
It's not like, I mean, I've had shows where maybe I've booked it badly, or the comedians don't know each other, so they're pretty quiet, they're reserved, they're not as riffy with each other.
Yeah.
It's not, because sometimes, I mean, it never goes badly, but sometimes it's like, fuck, you get off and you go, wow, that was a great show. I had these great people on.
Mm.
They killed it. This audience would have had a great time. And other times you go, oh, that could have been a bit better. But with the TV show ones, it's like, well, if it doesn't go well, they either don't air the episode or they cut out the bits that didn't go well. But with a live show, you've got to have some comedy.
Yeah. So apparently the TV shows, like I haven't sat in on many, but they record for hours and they just pick the best 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks really funny and it's tight.
You're like, wow, that was really, really funny.
Yeah. And not always the case. do you get, like for me working in radio, I've got like content directors and bosses who give heaps of feedback and there's ratings and stuff, but more feedback in terms of like technical, like don't do this, put this here, put that segment after this segment, blah, blah. Do you ask the other comics what they think of the show? Do you ask the audience? Do you just have a vibe? Do you go to other shows and go, oh, maybe I could do it like that? Or what? How does the... Because the show, would you say the show would be obviously a lot better now than it was when it started?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does that happen? Because I guess what I'm saying is because I have a job, it's very formal in that I've got a boss whose job it is to tell me what to do.
Sure, but this is all pretty self-produced.
Yeah.
Ramshackle. Yeah, I think it's just gotten better because I've done it a lot more.
Yep.
So that's one reason it's gotten better.
Is there specific things that you've done and you've just gone, oh, mental note, I won't do that next time, or I'll try and do this faster or that slower, or we just vibe the crowd. If the crowd's
vibe the crowd, yes.
You just keep hitting it. If they're not,
so
you move on.
For example, I come up with a new round, a new idea. I'm like, this is great. This is really, really funny. Yeah. And then you do it in front of the audience a couple of times and it doesn't go as well as your other rounds.
Yeah.
I will go, oh, I've got to either work on that or just not do
it. Scrap it, yeah.
Just scrap that sound.
And you wouldn't scrap it after one. You'd give it a few goes.
Yeah, for a couple of different teams of comedians. Maybe they'll make it funny.
Yeah.
Or maybe one of my things is because I know a lot of, like, for example, a quiz show on TV, they'd probably walk through the segments beforehand so they don't get on the show and go, sorry, I've got no idea what's going on.
Yeah, so what? Who said?
Sorry,
who
what?
Said, yeah.
But a lot of the time I've got comedians coming up, you know, giving up their time to come and be on the show. So they arrive, you know, 7 or 8 minutes before the show actually starts. So I don't have time to be like, all right, so round one is going to be this, round two is this, 3, 4, 5, 6 is
yeah.
So one of my things I try to do, and I have gotten a bit better, I think, but I still could get a lot better, is explaining the segment to the comedian so they can instantly go, right, this is what he's looking for.
And does that mean not to... for it to be basic or not creative, but you still have to make the segments simple.
Yeah, and I have sometimes made it a little bit too complicated.
Yeah.
And I think, because my theory is if I can't explain it to the comedians and they get it straight away, then why would the audience understand what's going on?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, so it's like...
So it's got to be just easy to digest. Also, I will say that I do it as a late show, so it's, you know, it's 11:15. People are pretty drunk on a Friday night.
Yeah.
It can't be too like, well, you got to do this, then this, then you do this, then we find out who the winner is.
Yeah, well, one of my favourite segments, and you've kept it the whole time, I think, is the, like, is it porn?
That's from the first ever show.
But there's so many different variations of you'll play a scene, you'll reenact a scene, you'll play the music, whatever. But, like, that's good because you've got all these different angles, but the reality is you can't not understand the game. It's either porn or it's not.
Genuinely it. It's porn or it's not porn. Those are the two options. And it's funny.
It's very simple. And, like, everyone's going to get that. But, yeah, I think, and I'll remind myself with radio especially, is like you were saying, that it's late and they're drunk. For radio, I always try to remind myself, they're watching the traffic, they're driving to work, oh, I've got that meeting at 8:30.
A lot of things on their
distraction.
On the
mind. So if you... are on the radio and you're like, oh, hey, all that thing's happening in your life, but this is what we're going to do. First, we're going to do this, then this. But if that person says this, then you have to say that. And it's like people just, they're mentally, off. Yeah.
Yeah, so for example, at the Comedy Festival this year, I thought of a new game. And I still think it's a pretty good game, but... I stand by it, and I think that maybe it would be a good like game show, like if that was the game.
Okay.
But for a comedy round, it's like, oh, I don't know. So it's a game, I call the game Obscurity. Mm. Obscurity, right? For example, so I found a list of the top 10 of something.
Yeah.
For example, the first one I did was the top 10 most followed people on Twitter in the world.
Yeah.
The top 10. But I've turned the list upside down. And you have to try and name people on that list. But the higher up the list, so the more common they are, the less points you get. For example, if you name the most followed person on Twitter, which a lot of people know is like Katy Perry.
Is it? Okay.
Or Justin Bieber, who's number two.
Yep.
They're one and two.
Too obvious.
You only get one or 2 points. But if you can name Cristiano Ronaldo, who's the 10th most person followed on Twitter, you get 10 points. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But if you try and go too obscure and you're like, oh, how about Beyonce? Sorry, she's 43rd on the list.
Yeah.
Or say Howard Stern. Sorry, he's 98th.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of... he's still got 16 million followers, but
he's not in the top 10. Yeah, right. And late, that was a bit too tricky.
Late night, it was just a bit too hard to sell.
Yeah, right.
But I think that'd be a cool, like a game show that everyone can have a go at.
Yeah.
Like even like a prime time thing, like, oh, yeah, oh, obscure answers, but not too obscure.
I think, was there a similar game in that you gave us a list of words and we had to come up with a combination that would mean the first image result was porn? And it was, again, there was really obvious ones that didn't get much.
Oh, yeah, so that's one of my most proud games as well. It's called Dave's Google Game.
Yep.
So I give you a list of 10 nouns and 10 adjectives on the screen so you can see them all, the audience and the contestants. And they're ranked from 1 to 10 in terms of how sexy they are.
Yep.
So number 1 might be like fun, and number 10 might be fuck.
Yep.
And adjectives also ranked from 1 to 10, and the 10th one is cock. And you have to
Google. So if you Google fuck cock, you've got a pretty good idea of what's going
to
come
up. Yeah,
on
so
the
you
screen.
Have to get a word from column A, which is a noun, get a word from column B, and Google them together. And you get points equal to column 1 times column 2.
Yeah.
For example, if you pick fun, and then you pick, say, balls,
yeah,
which is only 2 points, you get 1 times 2, it's 2 points. However, we Google it live in front of the audience with an image search. And if the number one image result is pornographic or sexual in nature, you get 0 points. You get absolutely nothing. So you have to try and push the boundary really hard and try and sound like a sexy combination to get lots of points. But at the same time, if you Google fuck cock 100 points, you're going to get porn.
You're going to get porn.
Yeah, which is great because it's funny if porn doesn't come up, and it's funny if porn does come up.
Yeah.
So it's a fun game. I mean, there's like limitless combinations, and I have like 5 or 6 different lists from 1 to 10.
I wrote down here, and I think I've said this to you before, I described the show Facty Fact, if the internet was a game show, or sorry, if the internet was a stage show, do you think, does that sit well with you? Or?
A lot of the rounds are definitely internet based. Yeah. There's another round called Ask the Internet, there's Is It Porn, I'm doing a new one.
But do you think that's a cool tool, like, and again, maybe with this podcast being called From the Internet, is like, do any other people use, you know, live Google searches in shows that you know of, or use the internet as much as you do? Not for prep, but actually during the show.
Hmm.
And do you think without the internet, like, obviously your whole thing would be totally different?
Yeah, well, I don't think... I definitely couldn't have done the show 20 years ago. Maybe I would have, but I just wouldn't have any of the same rounds.
Is it a given when you turn up to a fringe festival that's not in town and they're going to have Wi-Fi? They're going to have a script? Like, is that... Like, you can't just, I guess if you're a pure stand-up, look, they're going to have a mic, so I'm cool.
Well, I definitely have to plan ahead with the show, with the festivals I do, because I need a table for me to stand behind. I need a projector to plug the laptop in. I need one or possibly two tables if I've got two teams of comedians to sit behind. I need 6 chairs for them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I have to work that out. Pardon me, and I've actually bought, like, one of those 4G dongle things.
Okay.
So I nearly everywhere I've done the show, it's worked.
Have you ever, like, the internet's dropped out or it's gone slow, or you're mid-game and you're like, fuck, we've got no internet? Or
yeah, a couple of times I've had to reset the internet during the show.
And what happens then? You just get one of the guests, these professional comedians, go, can you just drop 3 minutes for us, mate?
No, we just sort of talk a lot of shit. Luckily, because they are there ready to go and ready to be funny. Like when I was doing that specific Google game, I remember one time it did drop out and we just had to be like, well, sorry guys, just wait a sec. Where does that? Luckily, it came back, because it would have sucked if they'd picked their words and then we didn't get to Google it.
Yeah. Would it be tricky? Because I know you've done the Facty Fact on Channel 31. And was it not the highest watched program for 1 month?
Sure. Yeah. We did about this time last year, once again, September, we filmed myself and Stupid Old Studios, which is a video comedy production company in Melbourne.
Yep, which we are recording in their podcast studio right now. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, guys. Is there anyone else here?
I think they might be in the office.
Okay.
they've got a studio space, and they actually, after Facty Fact, the comedy festival, were like, "Hey, we're shooting some web videos. Do you want to make a web series?" I was like, "Yes."
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And we wanted to make it for the internet, pretty much about the internet. Like, nearly all the segments are internet-based, like you said. And we wanted it to be, like, you know, digestible. So, like, 8 minutes, maybe?
Yeah.
And that just didn't happen. Like, it's just too hard to do a quiz show with introductions. You get to know the guests. They have time to answer.
And a part of the show on stage is you get to know the guests.
So it's not just, like, bang punchline. Yeah.
You get to know them and...
Yeah, you know who they are. So they ended up being, like, you know, between 15 and 20 minute episodes.
Yeah.
And they went online, and they got a few hits, but not probably less than I would have hoped. We got a lot of great feedback. So everyone that saw it was like, hey, it looks really good. And to be honest, it looks a lot better than I thought it would.
Yeah, it looks great. It does look great.
Like, I'm pretty happy that it's small, but that was the joke we were going for. Like, yeah. It's set in my bedroom. It's called Facty Facts Sleepover Club.
Yeah.
And it's all a really small set. And it's not a big set like a proper TV show has, but I think the actual production values of it rivals.
It's quite
like,
good,
it looks
yeah.
good. Like, yeah. it looks, and I'm actually really proud of it. And then we went online, it was okay. Then Channel 31 asked if they could air it, which is the community station here in yep. Melbourne and Geelong. And they put it up, and we did, I think, six episodes, and in May this year. And then the official Oztam ratings came back, which is the rating thing.
Yeah.
And it was the highest watched show on the network for the month. So it was getting 25,000 views a week.
Wow.
Which is way more than it was getting online.
Yeah.
And then I realized, hey, do you know why that is? Because we didn't make a web show. We just made a TV show and put it on the internet.
Yeah,
and
then it's two very different things.
Exactly. And then it found it actually went on its actual platform. It's like, oh, hey, it found its audience because this is the audience it wanted all along.
Yeah, of course. Is it, would it be tough? Oh, actually, first, before I get to that, like, would the ultimate result was be for, like, you know, SBS or ABC or like a station to pick it up properly and go, yeah, can you make 8 episodes and we'll.
That would be pretty. Proper show. I'm not going to lie, that would be pretty fucking great.
Yeah. Would it be. And so. Is it hard because a lot of the segments you just couldn't put on TV? Because it is quite adult and late night? Or is that just a matter of when you have that chat with ABC, you go, by the way, a lot of it's a bit rude, so if we could be on
it's got to be, yeah, instead of 7:30. Yeah, exactly. It's got to be on at 10 o'clock on a Friday or something.
Yeah.
Which is when it was doing well. It was aired twice on Channel 31, and the time it was getting its most views was when it was repeated on Saturday night at 10:30.
Okay, great.
So I guess if I was talking to a network or a production company, I'd say that. I'd be like, look, well, we put it out there and at this time and it really worked.
Yeah, would it suck to... Because, like, and with those, you know, is it porn segments, if they were like, no, we want it earlier and we got to take out this, this, this and this, would you suddenly be like, whoa, then maybe it's not quite the same? Or would you just be like, thanks for your cast?
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, great, don't you worry, I'll work really hard to find something that's 7 p.m. friendly and funny.
Yeah.
No, I'll just work. I'll just try and find something.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't see it as like a... It's not overly rude. And you're not a
super,
guy that,
and
like,
for example, so porn or not porn, I will preface and say that I never show any pornographic.
Yeah, it's just the music or the scene.
So it's the music or the scene, which is the dialogue this leading up to the sex scene. Like, it fades out and says porn if it is porn,
yeah.
Or if it's Dawson's Creek, it says not porn.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I never actually have any. And the only time that we ever do have anything live is when people Google things and it comes up with porn and it flashes up for a second, I take it away.
Yeah.
But for the TV version, we blurred all that out.
Yeah.
So you could tell that it was like nudity, but you didn't see anything. So it was fine to actually air.
Yeah. And you wouldn't consider yourself like a lot of comics, their thing is being rude and swearing, but you don't, like, to me, seem like that kind of guy.
No, it's not. Oh, yeah. That 52 kilo guy. I'm not a super smutty. I'm not a super smutty guy.
Smutty, that's the word I was looking for.
No, yeah, it's not super smutty. I don't think it is. Like, I mean, for example, I don't think my grandpa would enjoy watching it.
You don't think?
I don't think so.
Would you?
But
if he wouldn't enjoy watching it, would you enjoy knowing that he was watching it?
I mean, he probably would. If I got a TV show on the ABC, I'm sure he would watch it because
yeah.
he'd be proud to see me on there.
What would you tell? And I guess this is interesting for you in terms of the fact that you went from music to music comedy to comedy and now to into Facty Fact. Like, what would you tell like your younger self if you could tell anything career wise? Or do you think doing all of those things was a part of the evolution?
Yeah, I think it's fine. I would definitely say it's fine to evolve. And my biggest advice would be, don't be afraid to quit something.
How so?
Because
that's quite... Cause
I know, that's...
Most inspirational speakers are like,
Keep going. But if you're... For example, when I was doing music, and then I started doing comedy, and I was doing both for a while, I loved playing music.
Yeah.
But deep down, I knew that the people I was playing in a band with were quite serious, and that they wanted it to be their job. And through school, I'd wanted to be a rock star. Like, I wanted that to be my job one day. I wanted to play music, tour the world,
yep.
even if it's in, like, you know, shitty 200-seat, like, clubs. Like, I just wanted to do that. I wanted to live that rock and roll lifestyle, which is so funny for me now. But, like, I just wanted to play music. Like, it was my thing. And then I started having doubts, and I was like, oh, no, I think I prefer doing this comedy thing. But I was like, I was too afraid for a long time to admit to myself that I wanted to quit music.
Is that...
Because I put so much time into it.
Well, I think a lot of people... So I used to play volleyball, right? Just to go way off track.
That's fine.
And I got to a stage where, when I finished high school as well, and I thought, I'm never going to make millions of dollars playing volleyball, but I feel like I've trained so hard for so long that I need something to show for it.
That I totally felt. I was thinking, yeah, man. And I was also feeling like, oh, what if I quit this band and then they get big next week, you know, and then they're selling out the Forum Theatre, selling out the Sydney Opera House, that kind of thing.
Bit of FOMO.
And I was, exactly. Don't be afraid. Like, if you're not enjoying something, then there's other stuff out there. Like, you'll find other things you enjoy doing. And don't be like, oh, well, you know, I've spent 10 years playing in a band. I'm pretty trapped now. I can't get it. Because you can try other stuff. You can find other things that you love.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Because I think a lot of people are doing stuff because they feel like they're supposed to be, or someone else hooked them up and they're like, oh, I can't say no because that guy got me the job. So
yeah, or they feel like, oh, I'm good at this, even though I don't love it.
Yeah.
You know, some people just do something because, well, I'm naturally good at this.
But they don't love it.
Yeah, but they don't actually love doing it.
What was the band like when you said, oh, guys, I don't think I can keep doing this? Like,
well, they sort of put me on the spot. Well, we all put on the spot. They were about to sign a contract with a manager for 3 years.
Yeah.
And we sort of just sat down and everyone sort of went around the room saying whether they're prepared to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And luckily I went last because the other five went, yeah, really serious about this. And it came to me and I went, look, guys, I don't know. And as soon as I had that doubt, they're like, that's fine. You don't have to do this. Yeah. And luckily, it put me on.
That was like them pushing you out and going, you don't have to. No, they were genuinely like,
hey, it's totally cool. There's no bad blood or anything. And I was like, oh, it was such a relief. I was like, oh. Because I also felt like maybe they'll feel like I'm letting them down because we've all, you know, played together for so long now.
Yeah. Well, I think because when in that stage of your life, we were doing that weekly radio show together.
That's right.
And I remember in the lead up, you were kind of, because you were doing gigs for them and gigs in stand up and radio, and you were like, you just didn't have the time to.
Yeah, it was getting crazy.
And you were sort of like, I don't think we had like in depth chats, but you, like, it was obvious talking to you a little bit that you were like, something has got to give.
Something's got to go. And
And you were, you must be obviously a bit like hesitant or nervous just to what that thing was going to be, or do you always knew somehow you were going
to. Well, I kept thinking about it, that always came out at the bottom. Like,
do you wish you had to quit a year earlier or something like that now?
No, I'm fine with what I did because it was really fun and we, like, toured interstate a bit and, like, you know, had some great times.
Yeah, cool.
So, no, I'm actually.
How are they doing? Don't care.
No, I keep up with them. They're great. They're about to release their debut album.
Cool.
It's been a long time coming now. They're called Playwright. They're very, very, very. That's another thing. I was worried. This is so good. Maybe this is the best thing I'll ever be a part of. And even because the other people are so good. It wasn't. But then I started thinking, look, they're not good because of you. They're good because, do you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't writing the songs.
Yeah, lead singer's like, oh, by the way, guys.
Yeah, I was just playing bass. And a lot of the time, like, I was playing their bass lines because they're such good songwriters. And I was like, oh, look, you know, I'm just kind of just playing other people's songs. And it's really good. And I was worried that, oh, man. Maybe this is the best thing I'll ever be a part of.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've done a few shows. They did play at the Forum Theatre and the Sydney Opera House earlier this year, supporting a big UK band called Elbow. So they've been doing some good gigs. But I honestly think they're very underrated and they deserve to be bigger than they are.
Yeah, right. But I think that's a lot of, Aussie music. I'm not a big music person, but you feel like when you look at the Billboard charts and stuff that it doesn't represent who's the best musicians. Yeah, and I think everyone knows that.
I know, it's not, definitely not a competition. Yeah. I mean, it's not a fair competition anyway.
Yeah, what would you say is the, do you have like a specific like end game, or is it a lot of these, if you try, and it's kind of weird because we kind of talked about this yesterday, we were hanging out having a coffee, but like, would Facty Fact getting picked up for TV and getting 5 seasons be the ultimate, or do you just like the, you know, enjoying the journey and as long as you're not homeless, then all is well, or what's the plan? Because it feels like it's, like, yes, we're not, like, because we were sort of both starting doing fun stuff. It was probably 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the first time we met was when I hired you to be in that movie, which was 2010.
Right. I'd also say that
that's 5 years ago. Fuck.
You never know.
What am I doing
for life? But I think about that, and it actually gives me a lot of joy because you never know who you're going to meet that you're going to still hang out with in a long time. You know, you meet people like that was the first time I met you. It was just at a Degani's coffee shop near our parents' houses in Eltham.
Yeah.
With you know, we both had a mutual friend, Tom Locke, who... No, I wouldn't say that I knew him super, super well or anything. And, like, he just introduced me to this guy. And like
sister? Like, yeah. And I just knew that Jane's brother did comedy stuff. And I watched one of your videos online and went, oh, he'd be funny in a film.
Yeah, but you never know who you're going to still chat to. Like, you know, I've met, you know, probably thousands of people since then.
Yeah.
And now I still talk to you, you know, all the time.
Yeah, is that like part of the just being part of the peers that you like, that you just meet all these people and you just never know?
Yeah, and you just got to be, I think this is another advice, just be nice to everyone because you never know.
He's got to be massive. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, by the way, yeah, sorry, I was a bit of a dick to you about 10 years ago, but now you got this show, I'd love to be on it. Like,
yeah, exactly. And also, you should just be a humble person all the time. And the more I think about just reading that back with those timelines of, oh, you know, 10 years ago I wanted to do music, 5 years ago I wanted to do stand up, now I want to do quiz show. Because everything changes so much, and that really puts into perspective that, you know, you may have a plan, but you never know what is really going to happen or what you're going to love.
Well, I do this talk around exam time every year on my radio show, and sometimes go to schools and stuff to like year 12 students, and I say to them, just because you don't get your exam results doesn't mean you can't still do whatever you want to do. Because I didn't get very good scores, and I wanted to study finance. I didn't get good enough scores. And now I've got an honours degree in finance. So I say, look, even if you don't get the scores today, you'll still get it done if you really want it. Second point, I'm 25. Or when I started telling this story, I was 25. I'm now 28. I'm 25 and I have my honours degree in finance and now I work in radio. So I'm like, just because you don't do well in your exams doesn't mean you can't do whatever you want. And just because you want it now doesn't mean you're still going to want it in 5 years.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, that always goes down really well because it's just like a stress reliever because the kids get told in year 12, oh, if you fuck this exam, you're fucked for life. And it's just like, nah.
No, that's really just not conducive to learning either.
Yeah. So, but having said that, obviously Facty is going good, but it's not a sense of like you've evolved to here. Like, you still feel like you're in part of that process and who knows what the next phase will be.
Well, I never feel like I am in part of the process until you look back and then you realize, oh, that was part of the process.
Yeah.
I know. But I guess talking about it, thinking about it makes you more self-aware. And when you have those depressed moments when you think, oh man, you know, I'm 25 now and some people have like locked down these careers and I'm still wondering what I'm going to do. But then you think about it, you're like, no, you just got to enjoy the journey and try and work out what it is. But I will say that so far in my life, my 25-year career of life.
Career of being Dave
Warnicky. I never feel better artistically or creatively, I wouldn't say emotionally, but... than when I'm hosting the quiz show Facty Fact.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, when I do that, I just feel... I mean, it still has bum nights, but when it's going well, I'm like, yep. You just look around and go, this is what I... Right now, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, cool.
And there's not many other things that I get that same feeling from.
Yeah, right.
When you do stand up and it goes well, you still feel like, yeah, that was really good, but I just don't get quite that good a feeling when I think, yep, I'm good at this, and I really like doing it.
Yeah, two crucial parts.
Yeah, well, you put those together, and I guess you got to realize your strengths. There's a lot of people better than me at stand-up comedy, and I'll still do it because I still like doing it. There's so many more people that are just naturally more gifted than I am. But when I do the quiz show, maybe it's because other people don't give it a go, but when I do it, I'm like, yes, this feels like something I should do.